Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Alex, should we be talking about everything that happened on SmackDown or QR codes about a white rabbit?
Was there a QR code? Because if there was, I didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Explain it to me.
In the background of Hit Row's party, there was a QR code, which Twitter tells me sent people to Raw next week. So it's just, I don't know how long this will last, but this could be like, you know, Eva Marie and how long it took her to show up. Who was Billy Jack Haynes, like, took forever to show up, if I'm to use a really dated reference. Like, they could string us along for quite a long time.
The most recent one is Veer Mahan.
That's right, yeah, yeah. That'd be the most recent. Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I'd say over under, he shows up at the Royal Rumble at this point. We've had, like, 4 months of this. I mean, I assume that's Bray Wyatt's new character, and this is a good way to generate feed. I don't know if there's a lot more to say about it unless someone wants to rant about feeling like it was a bait and switch. I think this is kind of fun, and I'm patient. How about
you? I don't care enough one way or the other. If he showed up tonight, I would have been happy. I'm a Bray fan, but it's one of those things where I almost need a break from all the debuts at this point. So if they want to string me along, that's fine.
Yeah, yep. Sounds good. So we should be talking about the Usos extending their third longest WWE tag team title reign ever by at least another day or a week or whenever they next defend their titles, beating the Brawling Brutes, thanks to some interference at ringside from Imperium. What'd you think of the job that WWE did building up this match? Because the video made the tag title seem important, made the Usos seem important, but also I think made it seem quite implausible. Not that it was going to happen anyway, but that the Brawling Brutes were going to win. Do you think some people watched that and thought, well, they're making such a big deal out of it, maybe this will be the Brutes' night? Or did it almost, you know, just in as much as it matters, sort of give away, yeah, we've got more of a story to tell here with the Usos. We're not done yet.
Yeah. The issue with that video package, and you kind of hit on it, but it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because you get the benefit of making those titles seem really important, much more important than they have in, I mean, probably the last 10 to 15 years at this point. But at the same time, since you're highlighting how important the titles are, that's great, and that makes every tag title match feel super important. But it also makes it seem like the team that isn't the Usos really doesn't have a chance. So while it would be this huge moment if they did lose and when they finally do lose, there was next to no mention of the Brutes in that video. And it's not like they got a video of their own to balance it out. So they have to be careful with that, because it has a tremendous positive. But it does have that kind of inherent negative where in the back of your head, it's like, they have no chance.
Yeah, I would have liked more than the promo with the Brawling Brutes and Sheamus. With Sheamus, you know, talking about his match coming up in a few weeks, and then going, but tonight's about the Brawling Brutes. If there's going to be a tag title change, they probably would have stressed that more. But, I mean, it's fine. In a way, I mean, did many people think the Brawling Brutes were going to end the Usos' reign tonight? You know, not every title match on television needs to be hard sold to us as a potential title change either. I don't think they were necessarily taking away something that was likely in the first place the way they hyped it. So kind of on balance, I guess, I like making a big deal out of how long the Usos have been champs, showing old footage, Demolition and the Road Warriors and Hart Foundation, and talking about how many more days they need before they break the record. I'll take that and a relatively predictable retention later in the show rather than them deciding not to do it because it might foreshadow they're going to keep the belt.
Yeah, and with the actual match itself, they did a great job, because even feeling that way, they got me a couple times at the near falls, thinking that they would just do something out of nowhere. You know, they've gotten better about just, you know, not doing things just to do them. But the match itself and the near falls were somewhat convincing enough that you could see that they were going to do it. So I do give them credit for that.
Yeah, yep. I think they did a nice job. And I think the Brawling Brutes are a good tag team right now, good faction. As a babyface, hard-hitting faction, the match was used one to fill a main event spot on a Fox broadcast, and that's very important. Fox pays a lot of money for that, and they want to draw ratings, and they hope to stay well above 2 million viewers, or somewhat above 2 million viewers on average every week. And so having a tag team title match is one way to do that. But they also used it as a transition point to amplify the Sheamus-Gunther feud and set up that match. So, I mean, it's how WWE books, and I thought it was fine, with the asterisk being there's just too many Paul Levesque matches, too many matches in the Paul Levesque booking era. And again, Vince was hardly innocent to this, but I'm holding Levesque to higher standards because he's new and he's impressionable, unlike Vince. Just too many matches where there's interference leading to the finish. Every one of them you can justify and make sense within the way WWE books, but it's just too high a percent, Alex.
I agree, but this match did have a definitive ending, though. There wasn't, the Karrion Kross incident from
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
There was a definitive finish with the Usos using their finishing move and getting the pin, how they've beat basically everybody else. And honestly, I hear where you're coming from. I really do. But I didn't think that distraction was that egregious. Remember, the Brutes' whole thing is they're hotheads who like to fight. So it stands to reason that they would fight these people, Imperium, and then, the Usos are that they're like that. They're advantageous. I preferred that to Zayn hits Holland with a chair and then they give him a 1D. You know what I mean?
Right.
I thought this was less egregious than doing something like that.
Yeah, and it's definitely less egregious than what happened with Drew and Karrion Kross. It's just, Ridge and Butch were distracted, and then the Usos finished Butch with their stereo cutter finisher. It's the finish involves a distraction from people at ringside, and I guess it's still too high a percentage for me, but there are degrees of egregiousness, and this was more, typical and fitting their characters than just like an escape hatch finish. But honestly, I just don't think it's that big of a deal at this point to have to me, you look for opportunities to do clean finishes, and you have to really talk yourself out of, to me, this is a match where you go, can the Brutes stand losing to the Usos? And the answer is yes. They're still going to be the Brawling Brutes. So take the opportunity and do that. Could Drew afford to lose clean to Reigns? Probably not, without at least some more ramifications that you might not want to face. So that's why I say a match like this is your chance to change to add one to the other side of the ledger. And if I'm Levesque, I'm just like, yeah, we got to start taking those when it's not going to do a lot of damage. And because otherwise people are going to stop popping for near falls until there's interference or a run-in or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, on the McIntyre train, I don't know if you should care about that because he clearly doesn't. Anyway.
Yeah. They talked about that, by the way. They actually addressed that and said that Drew isn't one to dwell or gripe, something like that. Yes, that's obviously true, but maybe he ought to, and maybe everyone else ought to. I mean, that was quite a farcical end to a very big singles match.
Yeah, you can't build something up as your lifelong dream and then somebody snatches it away from you and 10 days later you totally forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that
just doesn't work.
He's going after the guy who cost, well, not really. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
No, he's not.
That's how I saw it. He's going after the guy who's been occupying his mind, as Cole said. But yeah, he's moved on from Sokoa because there's Solo cost Drew, and then Karrion cost Drew's chance to get revenge on Solo. So it's sort of a transference property of mathematics. Is that what's going on here? Now Drew is doubly mad at Cross. Oh man. All right. Let's pause and introduce ourselves and get to our live callers to talk more about this show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 23rd, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and a variety of other VIP-exclusive podcasts like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, and Wade Keller Hotlines. So go VIP, everybody, and also access like 35 years of archives or nearly 35 years of archives of hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s, which are fascinating, and thousands and thousands of podcasts since 2003 and newsletters dating back to the late 1980s. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Support us. Get these shows with the ads and plugs removed and a ton of bonus content and unmatched archives. The other voice you hear is Alex McDonald. He is the alt perspective reporter at pwtorch.com covering SmackDown on Friday nights. Alex, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks, Wade. Good to be here. Good to be here.
Tell people about your podcast, too.
Oh, actually, good timing, because I just saw our podcast hit the site tonight. That is the PW Torch 90s Past Cast with myself and Patrick Moynihan. You can actually check out Patrick right now as he's covering Rampage. But anyway.
No, don't do it. Stay here, people. I guess you could do both.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to his show, you know. You just read it. Anyway. Yeah, we look back 30 years ago this week at the Pro Wrestling Torch and go through everything going on. The episode that came out just now covers Flair's recent title win, which was his second WWF title win. Some superstars reports from around that time. Bill Watts and a very controversial Torch talk he did with you, Wade, about cutting wrestlers' salaries and his complete anger. And basically he said that Brian Pillman was completely useless. Just really interesting stuff. And we do that each and every week. And it's a lot of fun. If you lived through 1992, 1993, as we get closer to the end of the year here, or if, you know, you don't know much about that time and you want to learn something, it's a great look back.
Yeah, so the show is free and available on the PW Torch Daily Cast podcast feed. We've got three main feeds: the Wade Keller Post Show, this one, the Wade Keller Podcast, which is our blue logo show with our flagship and some flashbacks, pay-per-view previews, and interviews. Brian Gewirtz a few weeks ago, who just came out with a book about his time in WWE. I interviewed him, so check that out. And also the PW Torch Daily Cast with a different show with different hosts every day of the week covering a different theme. NXT, Wrestling Coast to Coast, the indie scene, Mike and Andrew doing the AEW show and more, and Alex and Patrick doing the 90s Past Cast, which is a blast, and he just talked about it. It's free, so go search PW Torch and add that feed if you haven't yet and check out their show. All right, we are here to talk SmackDown, though, and I'll give out the phone number because we'd like to hear from you if you're live streaming the show. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the program. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you can't live stream the show, but you want to be part of the show, emailing is the way to go. But we invite you to live stream the show and call in. You can find the live stream link at pwtorch.com and my TV reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Also on our Twitter account at pwtorch near the end of said shows. And also you can just go right to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to our live stream. Lots of ways to find us. And, of course, you can also download the show after the fact later every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. Once we get it post-produced and uploaded to our feed, search Wade Keller to subscribe to both the red and blue logo show. All right, that's a lot of business to take care of, that we took care of. So now let's shift to talking more SmackDown. And we do have Javier, who's going to be with us in a few minutes for a roundtable segment, and we'll get his take on the White Rabbit and the latest QR code. I don't know how long that conversation will last. He was excited about tonight if Bray Wyatt showed up, but he did. And we'll begin our callers here with Chris from Warner Robins, Georgia. Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
How you guys doing?
Good.
Just watching this show and seeing the bloodline work is like almost masterclass level nowadays. think about it is like, you know, watching Jay slowly like die inside when like Roman did the bait and switch for the shirt for Sammy was pretty special. Do you think the way The Rock comes in is through Jay after the disillusionment, after disillusionment, after disillusionment, as Roman keeps stringing Sammy along?
Alex, what do you think of that?
If Rock comes in through a member of the Bloodline, I don't think it's Jay. I like the thought process because I do think that's a possibility. And the thing is, though, I think the guy who's going to be the breakout star from this group is Solo Sikoa. I said on my show that I think Sikoa is going to end up either taking over the Bloodline, funny enough, kind of like what The Rock did with The Nation, or he'll end up being the guy that beats Reigns. I have a feeling one of those two and maybe both of those things is going to happen. So with that said, if somebody from the Bloodline does in fact bring The Rock in, I think it would be more likely to be Sikoa than Jay. But I hear where you're coming from. Maybe it'll be Jimmy, because Jimmy doesn't really do anything else.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with where the Bloodline is going, and they are flagging Solo Sikoa not being an enthusiastic, subservient member of this group. He, you know, the I thought it was just a great segment tonight. I mean, we easily could have led with it, talking about the Samoans sending him to join the Bloodline, not Reigns recruiting him. And I mean, it's just, they just dropped him in, and I mean, we might, as you just said, Alex, we might have the answer to our question of who's going to end Reigns' reign. And if Roman doesn't want to be full-time or he wants to move on to other things, that would be, you know, whether it'll work or not, we don't know, but Solo Sikoa could be the guy who just picks up where Reigns leads off, and we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I'm thinking of a sports analogy of, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, you know, that kind of thing, where there's just one great after another. Well, Favre's got some issues right now, but one great quarterback after another in succession. Pun sort of intended. Chris, back to you.
With Solo, I was wondering, like, they said, he said on Twitter that he has his eyes on more gold. So, like, the Intercontinental title is kind of tied up with Gunther, and I don't see him losing that anytime soon. So, will he target Bobby Lashley?
Interesting. I mean, it's a cross-brand thing, but, I mean, they're not super strict about that right now, and I guess the Bloodline sort of float because three of them hold belts that are representative of both brands. So in that sense, I guess he could tag along and issue a challenge, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal anymore given the flexibility of the brand split. I could see that. I also, and Alex, you can comment on that. Also, Cole said early on, almost under his breath, that they'd have more later on Solo being stripped of the NXT North American title. I don't recall him bringing that up, but it's possible I missed it. Do you recall if he brought that up in commentary or if it was addressed otherwise?
No, I caught it the first time, and it was one of those things where it's like, I'm glad he mentioned that. Like, I knew because I read it on the internet, but ordinarily I wouldn't have known that because I don't
watch NXT.
So I'm glad he brought it up, but it was a little confusing that he kind of just brought it up in passing. And like you said, we're going to tell you what happened, and then that never happened. So that was a little odd.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like instances where they make you have to look things up or guess. I really hate that. So it's a minor gripe, but it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. What about Solo's going after U.S.?
As far as Lashley goes, I really wish they would adhere to this brand split a little more. I get it right now with the title situation, it's kind of difficult to do that. But we're getting to a point now where the roster is strong enough that we don't necessarily need everybody crossing over all the time. And I don't care for it. We've talked about this before, but I really want to get back to the days where they're completely separate, and then down the road you can have, you know, two matches at a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania or something that feel bigger than they ordinarily would because the two people haven't interacted. And the best example of that is that at WrestleMania 21, we got two of them. you know, you had Orton and Undertaker who had been on separate brands and hadn't really interacted at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. And there's just, there is zero opportunity for that anymore because these guys cross-pollinate so much that everybody bumps into each other before you can build that.
Yep. And that's the it's like if you're on a diet and you're just really hungry and there's the snack cupboard and you go to it. Like to me, when they have people cross from brand to brand, it's sort of the snack cupboard. It's sort of saying, yeah, we don't have the discipline to stick with something that'll pay off later with a larger goal. We just need that instant gratification of filling out the TV show with something that keeps us from doing something we think is less appealing in the short term to draw a rating. Or Hunter just isn't, you know, that invested in it and thinks ultimately they can – it doesn't matter that much. And what you just said, he'd say, yeah, but there's this other factor that I have to consider. And to me, that's more important, but I don't think having a soft brand split is ever good because it just sort of makes, yeah, either have it or don't, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Just give it up and just don't do it. I like sort of structure and organized rules to guide things. And it sort of feels like you're just arbitrarily paying attention to some things and not others. And so it's never my favorite thing. Chris, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Well, actually, let's see. Roman, I got to tell you, it's so refreshing to see the guy become the guy who he always knew he could be. I mean, just the confidence and, like, the quick-wittedness now and everything else. I mean, even the way he flaps the belts when he's, like, you know, getting ready to, like, lift them up. I'm like, that guy is a star, and I know there's a contingency of people who have this thing where, like, he needs to lose the belts now. No, he's Tyson. He's Flair. You don't lose that now.
Yeah, Alex, talk about Roman's greatness, but also talk about the pros and cons of him holding the title, because, I mean, what Chris is saying is the case for keeping the belt on Roman and keeping the belt on the Usos and having unified belts. It does feel like there's something very important going on in WWE. Todd Martin has made this argument, especially leading into the Drew match at Clash at the Castle. There's something greater going on here, having this larger-than-life, clear, top-tier star in the company who is the Ric Flair of the NWA or the Mike Tyson of boxing during his run. How do you feel about Roman's performances and also that aspect of his reign?
Oh, he was just top-notch tonight, and he always is. And to everybody who wants to complain about the guy not being on the show every week, I much, much, much prefer this, where he shows up and does something meaningful. Because, you know, we talked a lot about Jay, and Jay was a huge highlight of that scene, obviously. like you said, Chris, you know, watching him die inside, like, he had that moment where it's like, yes, finally everybody sees what I see, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, damn it, no, they didn't. Come on. Like, this is ridiculous. Anyway, aside from the greatness of Jay, though, Reigns just commands. Like, we haven't had anything close to this level of a star in a very, very long time, and the keeping him off TV thing helps that. Like,
yep.
For as much as I respect Cena and what he did and things like that, a big problem with Cena was you never missed him because the guy was on TV all the time. Like, you didn't go a month without seeing Cena, and that's why as much as he got booed, like, look at the reception he got at the Royal Rumble. It's because people had a chance to miss the guy.
Yep.
And you need that. And with Reigns, you know, tonight, the whole deal with Zayn and the shirt, and he gets him the special shirt, but he's too cool to let on that he really likes the guy. And then Zayn hugs him, and he's like, all right. But more so than all that, and it was the thing I was the most excited about, was his interaction with Solo Sikoa.
Yep.
And that moment where they look at each other, and you just know that there's something more to this down the road. We're just not ready for it yet. And Reigns can almost see it, you know what I mean, in his facial expression, but he knows that for now this guy's going to bow down to him and acknowledge him, and he did. And that was big. I didn't know if that's how that would go, but I'm glad it did go that way.
Yeah, I think we could watch the opening segment 5 times and just focus on Sammy on one of them and Heyman on one of them and Reigns on one of them and Jay on one of them and Jimmy on one of them and Solo on one of them. Well, that'd be more than 5. And pick up things different than if you aren't paying full attention to them the whole time. Everybody's got a role. Everybody's playing their part well. Sammy is stealing the scene more than anyone else. He's the most compelling person to watch because everyone's standing still posing, and he just can't stand still. He's like a dog who you've just said, you want to go on a walk, but you got a couple other things to do before you can get the leash. And they're just like, come on, let's do this. This is great. He's just, it's such a cool thing. All right, Chris, back to you for any closing words.
Yeah, the only thing I'm looking forward to now is, are they setting up, I know they're setting up LA Knight for this whole, like, Maximum Male Models thing, so we just got to wait. He keeps hinting at it, but we don't know if he got brainwashed by a sister or something. We'll see what happens.
Alex, what do you think about the way that they are using the Maximum Male Models, and are you picking up on clues of the return of LA Knight?
I'm very disappointed with how they've turned out, and I don't know. We joked about it, and I thought that this might be the case, but I actually had some hopes that they would be treated as somewhat more serious than this. You know, maybe they're goofy models who could actually work, and once the bell rang, they were formidable. I don't know. I don't know why I talked myself into that, but I did. That's far from where we are. And at this point, it just feels like an avenue to break Max or LA Knight or perhaps a new name off. And I assume at this point he's going to be a singles wrestler and the models will still exist as they are, just completely devoid of him. And he will basically be something else entirely. I have a feeling that's where this is going.
Yeah. I think we can be getting more out of them, but I'm okay with them just as, you know, colorful jobbers. And maybe that's all they ever had planned. It's going to be interesting to see where Mason and Mansoor are in like 2 years. Like, is this sort of Red Rooster rising them, where they're just like, that's all you see when you see them, no matter what else they do? Or are they still in this gimmick? Or do they reinvent themselves? Or do they get cut? I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird turn in their career, and I'm not sure where it goes from here, but it doesn't seem real promising. No matter, even if they do a breakup of Max and Maxine, or, you know, some sort of angle with them. I mean, I guess you can always reinvent, you know, just reinvent people and repurpose them, and wrestling fans probably would accept that. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, Chris, I'm meandering here. Thanks for your call. Let's jump to Javier in Miami here earlier. We've got some other people on hold, Javier, but you asked if you go earlier. I understand it's a special occasion, and so I really couldn't say no.
Yeah, it's my birthday, so
happy birthday.
Company over. Thank you. I wish I cut the cake.
Oh gosh. Okay. I wish I had a holiday jingle for you, but I don't. I just have this. So PWTorch.com and PWTorch VIP podcast contributor Javier joining us. Happy birthday, Javier. Sorry to interrupt your cake cutting. Yes. Have you blown out the candles yet?
No, well, I mean, it's technically a key lime pie because we're here in Miami, and that's how we roll.
Cool. I like that better,
yeah.
Actually.
I'm here with my friend Kevin, so say hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Hey, Kevin.
He joined me to watch. he joined me to watch SmackDown today. but yeah, I really thought the opening segment was pretty much the best. Super disappointed that we did not get the Bray Wyatt return today. Really looking forward to that. Because, I mean, it
would have been a nice
sense.
Birthday present.
Yeah, I mean, and 923, that would have been perfect. And, disappointed in that. was really looking forward to that. And I'm watching, I'm looking at the clock, and I see that the Drew McIntyre segment starting, and my thoughts on it is that it's likely that I, you know, with the whole White Rabbit thing, that it kind of makes sense that they hook him up with Karrion Kross, because Karrion Kross has been the White Rabbit in other promotions. So it would kind of make sense, and I actually kind of like that, because then that cuts down on the promos that Karrion Kross has to cut. And, I mean, he could still chip in, but he didn't have to, like, carry a 15-minute segment, which I don't think he can. So I think that would be, like, a good, like a new Wyatt family with Karrion Kross and Bray Wyatt and, you know, maybe throw something else in there. Alexa Bliss.
What do you think of that, Alex?
I hate it. I hate it. I'm getting to the point, and I ragged on AEW for this, but why is everybody in a group now? Like, everybody's in a group. Like, just stop. Like, I just want Bray to be by himself. And I don't want him anywhere near Kross, because Kross sucks. And, like, the knock on Bray before has always been his booking, and now we're going to stick him with a guy that most of us think sucks? Like, what's the point of that? I would rather he just be independent of everything else. I don't want him hooked up with Scarlett and all. Like, I keep seeing this picture online of a new Wyatt family with Kross and Scarlett and Braun, and it's like, ugh, that sounds horrible. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just not on board with it. I get the White Rabbit thing, and you're probably right, Javier. I'm not on board with it.
Javier, I feel like I'm a mediator. What's your rebuttal?
Well, that's cool. I mean, the other reason is because that way Kross can take the losses for Bray Wyatt, and Bray Wyatt doesn't take losses that were completely devastating for his entire career.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of was the knock for him, is that whenever he had a match, and that was the whole purpose of the Fiend character, was essentially all the major losses that he had against the Brothers of Destruction, against Daniel Bryan, against Cena, against he never got the event revenge against Undertaker. He never got revenge against he did get revenge against both against Mick Foley. I think he got the mandible claw from him, didn't he? So that was kind of like the whole gimmick. And then this way, you know, you have Kross, and, you know, I'm like, and like you said, Kross is not, like, the top guy. But if you, you know, he looks like a tough guy now, loses to, I think that might end up being that he ends up debuting in Extreme Rules, where Kross just straight up jobs to Drew McIntyre.
True.
And then that, and then Kross just becomes essentially what Holland and, more like Kaiser is to Gunther, so that Gunther doesn't take pins.
All right, Alex, back to you. Has Javier softened your hatred for the idea?
No. I don't understand why he has to have a guy to take losses for him. Why can't we just have another guy that doesn't lose that often? Like, why is that? Why do we have to build in all these excuses for people to take losses? That I don't get it. Like, why can't we have another guy who is a main star that doesn't have a crony? Like, why does everybody have a crony now?
Javier, good point.
Well, it's pretty much for that reason. Because, like, if you had, like, a rotating staff of people, like cause AEW could pull this off. Because they have people who are, like, not on TV, and you could actually have people not on TV take losses, go out of TV, it doesn't hurt them. But, like, New Japan's kind of like that, too, where because, you know, you're not rotating you're not rotating your top guys as often, you know, it's other people in their group need to take the loss because if not, you know, you could have, you know, with the two rosters, essentially, like, two guys that seldom lose. But at some point, you're, you know, because you're doing you're essentially putting out 5 hours of TV in a week. I mean, you know, yeah, if you have a bigger roster, you wouldn't need it. But at least this both, you know, serves two masters, which is, you know, keep the people from losing, you know, keep the top guys from losing. and, you know, be able to tell a continuous story between two groups without them, you know, being, you know, without going, because basically with the way that the WWE structured, you're either stuck with 50-50, people trading wins and losses when they're in a feud, or other people around them are the ones taking the losses as you're waiting to build up to the confrontation between the main two guys.
Alex, final word from you.
I get the premise. It doesn't mean I have to like it.
Yeah.
I just want the guy to be by himself. Like, I really like Bray. The only person who's been fired by this company in recent memory that actually bothered me was Bray. He's the only one. And now that it looks like he's coming back, I just don't want him saddled with carrying. And, like, where does Scarlett fit into all that? Is Scarlett going to taunt people for Bray? Like, that doesn't make any sense. What is the White Rabbit? Like, Javier, did you see the Twitter thing? Can you give me, like, a synopsis of it?
Oh, I just got what I got on Twitter. It's just, like, they're hinting at the, you know, follow the White Rabbit kind of deal. And it originally pointed to 923, so that's what they were doing. I'm assuming, because I missed, because you said there was a QR code today?
Yeah, I saw an image on Twitter of it.
Yeah.
During the Hit Row segment.
Yeah, which is annoying, because, like, I mean, my feed is kind of off because I'm watching it on the Xfinity app, and I know that the time is a little bit off because my brother was texting me during the show, and he was like telling me things that were like 2 minutes away from happening, you know, so I got off because he was ahead of me, and, you know, so, like, I'm counting to the time, and then, you know, you had the Karrion Kross thing, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm thinking this is when Bray Wyatt's going to debut as McIntyre was beating up Cross, and then when Cross got the upper hand, I'm like, you know, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, wait a minute, does that mean that Wyatt's going to show up as a babyface? Because at that point, it was Cross who was, you know, on top. But then we went into that segment with Hit Row's party, and I'm like, well, is he going to show up and kill everybody on Hit Row? But no, apparently that was what pointing at was the QR code at that point.
Well, my take on this might surprise everybody, but I kind of don't want them to be combined because I actually think Karrion Kross is doing pretty okay right now. And I think it's kind of a weird – I mean, I'd have to see it to judge it, but I just think Kross and Scarlett as a act separate from whatever Bray does makes more sense than Kross being a subservient, you know, hitman, designated jobber, whatever, to Bray. But I'd have to know what Bray's doing in order to feel that way. But, like, I just don't think Kross has been a disaster so far on SmackDown. He's not, like, very good at anything, but he's, other than kind of having a look. But I think he's been passable in terms of his facial expressions, his body language, his promos, what we've seen of him in the ring. I think there's a place for somebody like him on a roster like SmackDown. I don't think he's getting in the way of a lot, as long as Drew beats him clean. We need some clean wins, and then I think Cross would then pivot to going after somebody who he would seem like a bully against and just be a straight-up heel and play that role until they need him to visit, you know, the semi-main event scene again. And I'm okay with that. But again, if they have something very specific in mind and it works with Bray, I mean, I'm open to it. It just doesn't strike me as a natural thing to merge.
I just want to point out, I agree with you. That's what I want to happen. I'm just saying this is what I think is going to happen. Because, yeah, I would prefer him. Like, if they're going to pair him up with anybody, it's Alexa Bliss. I think they already, because I didn't hear anybody talk about it unless it was me just imagining it, but didn't the lights dim during the Alexa Bliss match?
I didn't notice. Did you, Alex?
No.
Yeah, but did they have you?
Yeah, I believe so. That's what I was asking. I was hoping to get a second opinion, but like I believe there was like a brief like dimming of the lights when that was happening, and because they're they have brought up the character that she was playing. So if they're gonna pair Bray Wyatt up with anybody, I would prefer Alexa Bliss, so you could finish the story in, like, a better way than the direction that they were going, which I think they will.
Right.
And, you know, I know some people, oh, I can't believe Alexa Bliss, you're going to put her with this. Just, you know, if you listen to interviews with her, she was really into that character that she was playing. And she really likes working with Bray Wyatt because of the, you know, they're creative people. And, they you know, she's into that whole thing. So, and you can tell that she was really all in on that character. I think that some of the stuff that ended up happening was decisions out of their control, basically. Several things happened with the Phoenix character and the Bliss character that were decisions made above their, you know, what their where they were at. So I personally hope that that's the direction they go. If they go, you know, in a direction with them, I just think that the mentioning of that Bray Wyatt could, you know, make sense to be the next stepping stone above Karrion Kross, to be the next one for Drew McIntyre to have to deal with, as a, you know, bigger threat. Also fits, like, some of the stuff that, if now you make Karrion Kross second fiddle, it also fits some of the stuff that he's saying that, you know, talking about how career's not going right and it should have been somebody else. You know, the things that the stuff that he was saying kind of doesn't make sense for Karrion Kross, because Karrion Kross had no history with Drew McIntyre or, like, that kind of story. But now if you put Bray Wyatt in that position, it makes sense that Bray Wyatt was the one who they never got behind. They got behind Drew McIntyre and he failed. They did not get behind Bray Wyatt and he could have done something had they gotten behind him. So that's why some of those pieces fit together. And like I said, I would much more prefer if it's just straight up him by himself kind of deal. You know, in a Fiend-ish, not pure Fiend, because that got a little bit silly towards the end there, but like a like early Fiend kind of stuff where it was still plausible deniability that he was, you know, a real human being before, you know, they set him on fire and he was resurrected, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
But, yeah, that was pretty much it. I'm going to go ahead let other people, you know, get their call in so we could eat.
Cool. Yep.
The one thing I did want to bring up, because I know this is the kind of stuff that drives you nuts, Wade, Raquel came out all angry because they hurt her partner, and then she gets in the ring and it starts flexing. And I was like, that just – I hated that. Really.
Yeah.
I know you hate that.
Yeah. I know. Wrestlers just – like cosplaying in the moment, but not really being enough in the moment to understand how they naturally would be acting, you know, consistently throughout and going into their shtick is definitely annoying. The Acclaimed are great. I'm happy they're tag champs and they're a feel good story, but they got to stop doing their scissors thing in the middle of a match and turning their back on their opponents when tag team titles are on the line. You know, like I just want wrestlers to like keep in mind what the stakes are, and where Raquel walked out, if it's revenge, stay focused on that, not posing like a 6-year-old in the mirror, you know, like, hey, look at my muscles, dad. But, you know, copyright Scott Hall, because he's the one who started making fun of flexing and kind of almost ended it in pro wrestling, at least in WWE, because he made fun of everyone who did it. All right,
well,
Javier, cool.
Have a good night, guys. Alex, always good talking to you, man.
Yeah, you too. Happy birthday, Javier.
Thanks.
Enjoy the rest of your birthday. Like an hour, 10 minutes. Make the most of it, Javier.
Thank you.
All right. Yep, take care. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. And, Jay from Michigan dropped off. He was up next. So instead, thanks, Javier. And instead, we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
I guess I'll start with Damage Control, because I know you guys were saying on the Raw Post show, like, I know some fans are down on them, and, you know, and some fans I talk to, you know, are really high on them. But I don't see where Bayley is not doing good on the mic. That's where I disagree with people, because when you compare it to how she was when she first turned heel before, she seemed like nervous out there and not comfortable, and she just didn't really seem like she was fit for that role. And then she turned it around so fast later that year, and she was just amazing. And I don't really see a difference now. I mean, she goes out there and she calls fans idiots, you know, makes fun of Michael Cole, and she really seems like she's into it and loves what she's doing. I don't really see where Bayley sounds bad on the mic. The ring-wise,
yeah, well,
I don't see any problems. Yeah, go ahead, Wade.
Let me get Alex's take on that. There's been a lot of criticism of you know, Bayley coming back, and I've said that she just kind of seems like she's showing up and going through the motions of her character, which is not the worst thing on Raw or SmackDown, you know, because she's a pro, but it's not, it doesn't come across as like, oh, this is her defined character. She's inspired and she's about to, you know, establish a whole new chapter. Right? Maybe we get spoiled by, you know, Chris Jericho types who just, you know, when they have time away, they come back and it's like, you just feel like all they've been thinking about is what am I going to do to add a whole new chapter to my career? And this Bayley just sort of feels like a continuation, but maybe a little derivative of her last character. That's kind of been my take so far. I don't think it's been horrible. It's just been disappointing because there was such a buildup for how long she was gone. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there. That's the thing is Bayley before she left, and it's funny, a lot of people are bringing this up, but Bayley actually got hurt right before the fans came back. And I remember because I wrote in my report, it's like, oh, the irony of the fact that, you know, one of the MVPs of the pandemic era literally got injured like 3 days before fans came back.
Yeah.
To cheer her for the greatness that she was doing.
Yep.
And you know, she's back now and there's fans. So that could have something to do with it. But the big problem, it's not that she's bad, Mike. That's not what it is. What the problem is she was like must-see television. Like during the pandemic, when you talk about that time, the names that come to my mind are Reigns when he came back, which was at the tail end of the pandemic. And then you have McIntyre and Bayley. Like when you say pandemic era to me, those are the three highlights that I think of amidst a lot of the crap that went on around in there. But that was the top of the food chain. And so now that Bayley's back and she's just kind of part of the card, it's kind of like a quarterback towards the end of his career. Like he's still good, but it's not what you're used to. You know, I'm a Bucks fan. I love Tom Brady going out there and throwing one touchdown as long as we win. But if he doesn't throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns, you're going to have people saying, no.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily true. Like, she's still doing well, but because the expectation level was so high, it's just a little disappointing. And I think Wade's right. It's been super disappointing for me. Bayley's my favorite female on the roster. And I don't think she's into this. I don't think that this was her idea. I don't think she's totally behind the idea. I don't necessarily think she wants to be a part of a group. I don't think this is her cup of tea. And I think she's just running through the hits to get through it until they find something she likes.
And I think just having a little bit clearer picture of what damage control means, why they call themselves that, what's their mission, it feels sort of trite and platitude-y and not really concrete. You can't get that every time with a pro wrestling character, but you have to have something else to make up for it. And I just don't think they just don't blend as a natural group. I spitballed an idea earlier in the week. I think this week, you know, like do vignettes where they film themselves being obnoxious in public places, like just like do something. So we kind of know what they're like. I mean, you can come up with a dozen other ideas and maybe nine of them are better or 11 of them are better. But like, if they just went out and just were rude to like people on the street and servers at restaurants and making fun of people at Walmart, I don't know. I don't care. But like, give me something, a reason to boo them other than Bayley insulting the local sports team that I don't care about every week. Yep. That's not a character. And Io Sky isn't anything. And Dakota Kai really hasn't been established as anything. So that's the part that's disappointing. Mike, I'll throw it back to you because Alex and I had a lot to say there.
Yeah, that I can agree with you on, Wade. And when fans say they want more from Damage Control, I can agree there. Like, you know, I like their promos and everything, but I would also like to see, like, more. Like, I'd like to see them, like, gang up on people in the back and beat up innocent females, you know, and, like, have them cause violence and chaos in the back, stuff like that. You know, develop personal feuds. And like you said, Wade, you know, that's how you would boo them. Like, you can boo them like that, you know, instead of just going out there and, like you said, Wade, about cutting a promo on the sports team that's local and all that. That I can agree with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what they're doing I think is fine, but I want more. You know, as far as the ring work, I think they're great in the ring and all that. And Bayley versus Belair, you know, I think should be great. And if there's any rust from Bayley, I think we'll notice it in that match. Because I think that's her first like really good match, and she came back. No.
Yeah, Mike, give us one more kind of concise topic. I want to get to a couple more calls, and then I'm a little tighter deadline with my producer tonight, so I'm getting nudged to keep the pace up. But go ahead with another topic, because I know you held for a while.
Yeah, on the Liv Morgan table spot, like, how do you guys think that came off? I think Liv was great tonight, showing aggressiveness, and I think she came off good, showing rage and going extreme. I think that table spot looked really, really good. And I think maybe it's a tease, at least, for maybe her to go heel and do something like a caller said last week to Rousey and beat Rousey in a heel way.
Yeah. Well, let me introduce an email into the conversation, too, because Grant from Detroit emailed and said, I'm so confused. For a week, they've been trying to shade Liv as a heel. And now this week, they played her up as a face while the in-ring already leaves something to be desired. But now they're flip-flopping her personality, her whole character. This program with Ronda is on life support at this point. There's no way to take it seriously. Michael Cole was a big booster of everything that Liv was doing. She was against the heel in Lacey Evans, who was showboating and for some reason in slow motion. Everything this match was like, listening to an audiobook at half speed. Just turn it up, people. My God. But Lacey's just doing a move and then acting cocky and showboating. And I don't know what was going on. I just know Michael Cole wants us to like Liv Morgan, but Liv Morgan hasn't been all that likable. But then at the end, you know, Cole's like, she's showing an edge. Those naysayers, they were wrong. Look at her. I'm like, so we're supposed to be excited that she's ready for the match. She's ready to compete in an Extreme Rules match, which she brought up to Ronda. And we're supposed to be happy that she's willing to use weapons in a match that she proposed so that she can hurt Ronda Rousey, who's also being framed as a babyface. This is a mess. And Alex, I don't know what they're trying to do with her character. Because I don't have faith that Liv comes across how she intends. I just don't trust her acting and her body language, her facial expressions, her judgment in that way. And so we've been reading into things, and this week was meant to be an emphasis that she's just going to earn Ronda's respect. And then you got Cole touting, she's the only one to pin Ronda twice. And it's like, yeah, but they weren't like at all pins to be proud of. And so he's hurting his credibility as an announcer, touting that as a reason that we should think she's credible. Like, you can think she's credible for other reasons, but she held her own with Ronda. She beat this person and that person and what she did against Beck. But don't say the two pins are what does it, because, I mean, that's like congratulating somebody for hard work becoming rich who inherits money. It's just, no, like, you can be proud of other things in their life, but don't point at the thing that is actually a non sequitur to that has nothing to do with their work ethic. So anyway, Alex, there's my rant. How about you?
I have a different rant, but it goes to your point of making Liv Morgan look credible.
Yeah.
So let's back up for a minute here. Lacey Evans wasn't on TV for how long? Like 3 months, give or take?
Yeah, it's all a blur, but it sounds about right.
Okay. And then Lacey Evans came back, and she got beat in about 2 minutes in that five-way, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I mean, you can lose in 2 minutes and look bad, or you can lose in 2 minutes and look worthless and completely unimportant, and that's what she...
Okay.
Yeah.
On tonight's episode, She dominated the women's world champion for 7 minutes and lost on a fluke.
Yeah.
And you're telling me, I don't care what commentary says, those things emphasize the fact that Liv Morgan is a complete joke as a champion. It's a joke. And all they're doing is highlighting that. On top of all of those things I just mentioned, wasn't it Ronda Rousey who eliminated Evans? Okay. So,
I'm all positive,
So this woman was destroyed by the woman who's challenging you in 2 minutes, and you got your ass kicked by him for seven, and then won on a fluke because she got distracted, and then you beat her up after the fact, and I'm supposed to be excited about you defending the title against this person?
Yeah.
Everything they're doing with Liv is a giant miss by a mile. It's horrible. It's horrible.
And she's not doing her part well either, I don't think.
No. And that's the part that I want to throw in here too, because over the years I've heard you complain about this, but what is her screaming doing? What is all that? The screaming come on in her face and then screaming about getting extreme after the table? Like, what the hell does getting extreme mean?
She's awkward. And I mean,
it's so bad, man. It's so bad.
They're putting her in positions that are they're putting her out there to fail by asking her to do things that she's just not good at. And her role is an upper mid-card, likable underdog who shows fire and desire. Was that a tag team? To succeed, but comes up short, and she's not expected to, you know, be a single star who competes against the top tier. And I'll put her on my roster. That's fine. I think people like her, but they're putting her in a position now by over pushing her and asking her to do things that she's not good at. You know, it's like Kirk Cousins trying to rile up a locker room. Ah! It's just like, no, you're better off when you're just doing something other than trying to be the locker room leader. Like, don't ask her to do things she's not good at. So anyway, point made. I hope she's not a listener of the show.
The thing with her is her spot on this roster is she should be a babyface version of Natalya.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where she belongs. And
exactly. Yeah.
And everybody who wanted her to get her shot, well, here you go. And it failed. So let's move on now. Experiment over.
Yep. I agree. Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Hey, do you want to throw in a quick comment after that?
Real quick. Think if she fails, it's WWE's fault. I don't think it's Liv's fault at all. But that's my opinion.
Yep. All right, cool. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Yep.
Bye. Yep, have a good weekend. Sorry to rush you. All right, let's go to Brad in New York. Brad, you are up. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. The Liv thing, you know, one of the things that really surprised me, and forgive me, I'm just joining a little late because I was watching behind on DVR, but if you brought it up, whatever, and it's really not the most important thing, but I was surprised Liv really didn't even really get an entrance. You know, she was kind of basically almost at the ring with her, or, you know, she really didn't get an entrance that you would see a champion get on a pretty much 99 times out of 100. I was a little surprised by that. Do you think there's anything to make out of that in terms of they don't believe in her as, you know, or it's just not credible or it's just not working, or you think it was just a time crunch thing or something else? I don't know. Also, you know, again, the Maximum Male Models thing, they didn't get an entrance either, and I think if there's any group that can get an entrance and have an entertaining entrance, it's them. I was just a little surprised that they, 2 weeks in a row now, don't get the chance to, you know, walk down the runway and do their little thing and whatever. Just a little surprising. But the L.A. Knight thing, or the Max Dupree, sorry, with him taking off his jacket and slamming it down in disgust and going crazy, Do you think that was an indication that he's going on his own to do his own thing at some point, or was that just, you know, frustration with loss and that? Yeah.
I think Paul Levesque thinks that he can do more with LA Knight than being part of the Maximum Male Models gimmick. That I get the sense Levesque, this is not taking great insight or a risky stance to take. I don't think he sees big things for the act. I think he sees it as a colorful jobber tag team. But I think he thinks LA Knight, as he used him in NXT, is capable of more. So having Max Dupree show frustration with the Maximum Male Models wanting to pose for a photo shoot to then, you know, as Corey Graves said, it's all about social media or whatever he said, but they lose the match, you know, that's actually a good way to introduce a serious manager who's like, I wasn't around serious people. I need to be around serious people. And then he can become a manager or even a wrestler. I hope that's the case. I think he's really good on the mic. And I think he'd be – I'm trying to think of every manager in AEW, but I can think of a handful who he's definitely better than by a good margin. And so, you know, if you're looking to feature someone in a good manager role, I think LA Knight's a good character. You know, and again, we're seeing Paul Levesque bring back a lot of NXT characters that he thinks were miscast by Vince McMahon. Alex, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where it's going with LA Knight. I think they're going to find a different way to use him. I don't necessarily think he'll be a manager, but I like the idea. I think he might wrestle.
That's fine too. Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I say that is because if he's going to be a manager, I don't know who he would manage. That's my only hang up there. I don't know who it would be unless it's like Dominik Dijakovic or something like that.
Yeah. 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 Like, yeah. Bring, how about a faction, Alex? How about we bring two, three people together in a group?
So we can have the 17th one on the show? No.
Yes, yes. All right, very good. Brad, back to you.
Yeah, I caught you guys talking about this earlier, but in my opinion, this was a really good show. But to me, Bayley and her faction were the worst part of it. I think that was the least entertaining segment. That was the least entertaining match by far. And it just... this group, like you said before, with the Damage Control name, like Damage Control, like, are you trying to control damage or are you trying to cause damage? Because it seems to me like everything they say is the opposite of what their name is. So, you know, we're going to cause havoc. We're going to, you know, do this in the women's division. We're going to take everyone out. And then it's like, our name is Damage Control. It's so stupid in every way. And, you know, the Roman segment was really funny with Sami Zayn take off the shirt. And I did think there was going to be maybe some tension with Solo for a minute when he called him up and said, you need to acknowledge me. But, of course, that happened. I really just thought that was very enjoyable, the whole thing. And Sami dancing around like a completely out of character for what the rest of the group was. You know, like the rest of the group is all serious and, you know, mean mugging everyone when they come down the ramp and he's like dancing and jumping. And it's just such a funny dynamic and it's just something to really like. And I'm happy that's the way this turned out with Roman giving him the shirt rather than kicking him out of the group. I think it just makes so much more compelling, for what's going to happen next. And, you know, the last thing I just want to say quickly is that the Brutes, I mean, that crowd was amazing tonight. They were really, really, really good start to finish. And the Brutes were just so over. Even Ridge Holland, like, when he got that hot tag, they were just going crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, not for him, like, just for the whole thing. But, you know, I've heard you talk about what is Ridge Holland going to do? How is this ever going to work? And I've heard a lot of people say, how is Butch ever going to get over? How is that ever going to work? I think it's happening now. I really do. I think it's happening, and I view them completely differently after Sheamus has turned face and after they've turned face seemingly. And I think this is a very good spot for them. I mean, whoever thought that Butch and Ridge Holland would be main eventing on Friday night on national television, you know, I mean, that is really surprising to me and it's a great turn of events. And that's really it. But I did think start to finish, this was a very enjoyable watch and a quick watch, a good episode. and one of the better ones as of late. So
that opening segment, I mean, I feel like we should just, anytime someone brings it up, emphasize that was like really, really good for so many reasons. And Brad just highlighted some of them. The couple things besides just singing its praises again. The way Solo Sikoa is acting right now is very promising, that he's going to, like, he's already, okay, gather my thoughts. How do you drop somebody with as little experience as he has into the bloodline where he stands opposite of Roman Reigns, and he seems like a potential rival for the alpha role? It's just, I didn't see this in him in NXT. I mean, like, this is, he just is, like, I can't imagine who else could stand in the bloodline and pause, and you would be like, oh, God, they don't want to acknowledge. And then he knows it's not his time to make his case. But we all see that he's not thrilled about it. But he has plausible deniability with the nuance of his acting to not do anything that would be showing up Roman, where Roman would know he was looking weak. And it's a fine, you got to thread a needle there in order to pull that off. So I love that. The Jay and Jimmy stuff still feels like Jimmy's just throwing it in Jay's face. You know, like, oh, Sammy, you're great. And Jay just can't stand it. And then Sammy just, well, everyone's, as I said earlier, when everyone's standing still and he's dancing and smiling. And then the dynamic with Reigns and Sammy, and it's like, you know, wrestling, we have the swerve culture going where, you know, wrestler will say something and then the joke's on the fans. In this case, it totally fits Roman's character. Mess with Sammy. And Sammy foreshadowed, like, I don't know if you're serious or kidding. And Roman just played it out like he was serious until the very end where he wasn't. My question to you, Alex, you can comment on any of that, but my specific question is, the fans are cheering Sammy, wanting to be part of and be accepted by a group that includes Paul Heyman ripping on them, and they're clearly a heel group with a nuanced dynamic. But then you have Cole later saying there's no more obnoxious, insufferable human being than Sami Zayn. And I don't know if you have fans cheering Sami in the opening segment, should your lead announcer, whose credibility is important, be talking about how obnoxious, so there's no more obnoxious human being than Sami Zayn? Do they have to soften that, or should Cole keep that narrative up because of reason X, Y, or Z?
Well, he is obnoxious, so pointing that out doesn't necessarily hurt him.
But does he acknowledge the fans like him, though? Like, he's so obnoxious, I don't get why the fans are cheering him. Like, something like that. Cole doesn't have to be in sync with the fans, but he should be in sync with what's happening in front of his very eyes and acknowledge it. That would be a middle ground.
Yeah, that's what they should do. He should acknowledge it. But the thing with this is it's so good and so nuanced. And the thing with Sammy is, like, people are cheering for him because they can relate to that, you know, wanting to be in with the cool kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because regardless of how much of a jerk you think Reigns is, there's no denying that he is the coolest person on this show.
Yep.
Like, it's just how it works. Like, it just kind of is what it is. And being accepted into a group like that is something we can all relate to, and that's why Sammy gets cheered, because he wants it so badly, and they finally do, and you can see how much it means to him, and that's why it resonates with people. Zayn is obviously, and you were the first person to kind of talk me into this, and now it's coming to fruition, and he is so obviously going to eventually break out and be a hugely popular babyface, but that moment is going to be so much bigger than it could be because of the slow build that they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Cole has to stay on the side he is now in order to perpetuate that notion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you might be right, because part of it is the second Cole starts endorsing Sammy as, you know, likable or lovable or endearing or any compliment, it's sort of like when he called CM Punk the pipe bomb throwing superstar. You know, you sort of, when Cole corporatizes something with a phrase, and, you know, and now it feels like it's officially how you're supposed to react because Cole is saying it can undercut what's happening. And that's where Cole just going, I don't get why the fans like this guy. or, you know, obviously fans are, you know, fans are rooting for this guy. I don't see how he's so obnoxious. Like, that actually makes Sammy more popular, because anything that Cole doesn't understand, and I think Cole's doing a really good job, but his character is not a trendsetter. He is not an influencer. He's not.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's okay for him to not get why something is awesome. It actually makes it more awesome if he doesn't get it.
Yeah, Cole is like when your parents start to like something, and it just makes it not cool anymore.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
That's what it is. On Sikoa, though, I can't say enough about Sikoa, man. I think that guy, like, you're right, it came out of nowhere. But, like, all this talk about Bron Breakker's the future, that's the guy that's going to beat Reigns, and that's going to be the big star in the company. Bron Breakker will probably work out in one way or another. I don't know if he'll work out in, like, a Bobby Lashley sense of working out, or like Seth, or like Roman. I'm not willing to say how that's going to go, but I will tell you with certainty, unless Sikoa screws it up, in 3 years, he's going to be one of the biggest stars in this company. And it's not close. That guy is going to be – Sikoa will at one time headline at WrestleMania.
Wow. I don't think
he screws it up.
Yeah. I can't say you're crazy by positing that. Brad, any closing words for me?
And I will get off, and I'll let you get to the other people, but very quickly, Solo does fit in like a glove. I mean, it's amazing to pluck a guy from NXT and have the fit be just so incredibly natural right off the bat. And it's very, very compelling how that is. And, you know, with Liv Morgan, last thing, and I'll be very quick with this, I do think
sure.
My prediction from a few weeks ago is going to come true, that tonight was setting up her to use some incredibly vicious weapon to win this match, and not have it come across well either with the fans or anything, to beat Ronda. But I think that that's what this was a foreshadowing of tonight. And I really, truly believe, I think it's going to come true, because tonight she was trying to show, they were trying to show that she has that killer instinct, she has that viciousness. And I think it's going to be something where you totally understand how Ronda loses, because she gets hit with like a sledgehammer or something like that. But I'll let you guys go. I know you guys aren't the biggest Liv Morgan fans right now. I'm not, you know, crazy about her, but I do like something about the aspect of it. And it's not, yeah.
Brett, and that's the thing is it's not fair for Liv to put her in a position to not succeed. And I think that's what WWE is doing by over pushing her and putting her in a position where it just doesn't feel like it's her natural best role on that show. You know, people are paid a lot of money to be casting directors for a reason. You know, there's, you know, casting for a show is important, and casting for a play is important. Casting for whatever is important. Like, but you don't want to put somebody who can't carry the spot you're giving them, or it's not even about they can't carry it. It's just it's wrong for them. Becky Lynch shouldn't be in the role that Liv Morgan is best at. Like, everybody's sort of got their own. Some are higher than the other. So the fact that people are sort of rooting for her and like her is sort of in spite of what she's doing and what she's being asked to do and how she's being booked, which plays to my point of put her in her natural spot as this genuinely likable, solid ring worker who's in the second tier and an underdog and scrappy and fights hard but loses to top-tier people. Brad, thank you. Always good to hear from you.
Thank you, guys. You too.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex, there is something to that. I mean, people want Liv to succeed, and WWE should lean into that and not screw it up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where I never got it, and I hate to say this, but I just feel like every time she's on TV, my initial thoughts on her were just proven right.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be wrong, I really did, but
it's
just to the point now where this is one of the – her SmackDown title run – is reminding me of when Braun Strowman was Universal Champion because Roman didn't want to be on TV. It's just bad. It's not credible. It's just bad, man.
Yeah. All right, up next we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro. I was kind of speeding through the show because I was hoping to hear from Derek in Utah who was attending the show. I didn't get confirmation he would call up, but I know he said he was going to the show. So, Sean, we might have a few more minutes with you than I thought if he doesn't call up, but I do have to run in a few minutes either way. But go ahead, Sean. Sean from Mercyville, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Wade, it's always good to talk to you. Alex, I missed you, man. Always good to talk to you. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Sean. How are you? We need to get Sean some music, too.
I think Javier would take issue with that. You know, in fact, Javier already has. He said you better not give music to anyone else.
No, I already argued with Javier once. I'm not doing it again.
I want to say, real quick, happy birthday, Javier. Key lime pie, man, that's where it's at. Dude, eat as much key lime pie as you want because that's awesome. That's my dessert of choice. So I love that. I'm happy he's eating that right now. I'll try to be quick, Wade. I don't want to harp on what you guys are talking about with Liv because I was curious initially what you thought because I don't look at your guys' reports of going into it because I want to have my own thoughts. And that segment was horrible all around. There's nothing good about that segment. Liv, if she wins keeps the title, I'm going to want to throw something at my TV. We're not saying anything against Liv the person. We're saying the way Liv is booked, it's horrible. She's booked horribly. Like you said, Alex, with the Lacey thing, for Lacey to not get an entrance, which was funny, I laughed at that, honestly. I was like, wow, that's hilarious. For her to not get an entrance, her to dominate a match, and then Liv all of a sudden attack her after a match, it's stupid. I'm sorry, however you frame it, it's stupid. Don't do it, WWE. It's dumb. But going to other things, with Braun, I was curious how that Braun-Otis match was going to go. I was impressed with the match for what they did. I thought it was pretty solid. I love when Cole, you know, goes into, oh, Braun does a drop kick. He's done drop kicks many times. We've seen him multiple times. He's a pretty athletic dude. You know, that was funny. What did you guys think of the match? Now that the gimmick is he's the monster of all monsters? I think that's really stupid. I wish WWE would quit doing these dumb gimmicks of you're the monster of all monsters. I think that's kind of weird. What do you guys think about all that?
I mean, the monster of all monsters is just it doesn't mean anything. Wasn't a tournament he won of other monsters. It's just a thing that was said. Yeah, I mean, I don't love it, but I mean, it's whatever. It's a nickname, and if you know, the idea is he's a babyface, he's a good guy, whatever. And either he dubbed himself that, or somebody dubbed him that because of all monster wrestlers in pro wrestling, he's the biggest and baddest. And I mean, that's the implication. I'm not gonna make a big deal out of that. I don't think it's great, but I mean, it's fine as sort of a tagline in the background of your entrance. The match was fine. I mean, I like that Cole and Graves and the whole production. They made a big deal out of it. You know, Otis lost, but they made it. They framed it as a big deal. And if you lose a match that's framed as a big deal, you were part of a match that was a big deal, even though you lost. And I think that Otis wasn't hurt by that, especially given how they've been treating him lately. You know, they're not protecting him or seeing him as, you know, a potential top guy. So he's a valuable, entertaining role player who is in an odd couple tag team with Chad Gable. So I like it. And Braun, of course, should have won. But Otis looked like he put up a good fight. I love the tail of the tape. I thought they did a good job with it. Yeah. What do you think, Alex?
I really liked the tail of the tape. That was really, really cool. I was very happy they did that. Harkens back to old school stuff, and I always like when they do that and make it seem like a real sport. The match was fine. God, you guys are asking me about like everything on the show I didn't like.
The
match was fine, but Otis just isn't positioned in a spot to where anybody should care about him. Like it's unfortunate because he does have talent and there was like a path to something, and him and Gable are really cool and really funny, and they both are good workers on top of it, but they're just not positioned in a way for it to be taken seriously. So it was one of those things where it's like, eh, let's just see, you know, how long it takes Braun to win. I'm just, I'm in this camp with Braun where who is on this roster that he hasn't worked with that you want to see him work with? Like, what else is there for him to do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against Braun being brought back, but I wasn't for him being brought back. Like, I'm sort of agnostic. It's fine. I get it, you know, and he was away for a while. But I keep coming back to what you just said, Alex. I'm not excited about any potential match for him. I don't want to see Braun against Drew. I don't see Braun against Lashley. I don't want to see Braun against Roman. I mean, I don't, like, yeah.
And not only that, but we've seen all of that.
I know.
None of that is new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. That's kind of the thing is, like, Braun's first run was fine. I mean, you could say they dropped the ball and he could have been bigger. And, it, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of different ways you can go with that depending on when you started watching and how you feel about it. But at this point, there's just nothing novel about the guy. He's a big monster. That's cool. Like, but he's one of those people that he's not fit to be like champion. And what are you going to do? Have Cody come back and beat him? And then what? When Braun wins, it's not interesting anymore. And he's just one of those guys that, again, whether you agree with his first run or not, he just kind of ran his course.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Yeah. I mean, so I'm curious. I mean, are they just building up Braun against Otis at WrestleMania? Like, are we going to just get Braun treading water, you know, squashing, but I don't even know who they can use to fill time. You know, I don't know who can beat.
You said Otis there, but did you mean Omos?
Oh, I did mean Omos. Yeah. Omos. Okay. Yeah. Good catch. Oh, yeah.
God.
I mean,
oh,
is that what they're, I mean, you know, are we building up to that? And if that's the case, what do you do in the meantime? And I mean, that's a Vince mm-hmm. McMahon thing. Oh, God. Oh, imagine. Oh, yes. Gets Braun.
I lied. There's one person I want to see Braun Strowman wrestle.
Yeah.
Logan Paul.
Oh, gosh. Alex, don't bring that in the world. Come on, man.
Well, this could be, explain yourself, Alex. This could be good.
Because if Braun can't lose and he has to destroy everybody, Logan Paul is perfect.
Yep. See, Sean? I knew what Alex was getting.
Alex, the thing that just hurts me about going back to just, you know, propping up the Logan against Roman thing, which, you know, for Crown Jewel, I'm probably not going to watch. So, I mean, yeah, it's fine. It's a novelty, stupid thing. But like you said, I think, Wade, you brought it up. The match should not be for a daggum freaking title. Like, he's not worthy of a title match, for God's sake. Like, that's the thing that really gets me about these matches, when they just say, oh, they get a title shot for the dumbest reasons, and all of a sudden Logan Paul, because he's a so-called, like, megastar, which a lot of people don't even know who the heck he is, he's getting a title match against Roman. Like, get out of here. It's just dumb. And going back to what you said, the one part I liked about the Sammy segment, too, that was so funny was, they actually had me when Roman, you know, told him to take the shirt off. Like, I was almost sold, like, oh, no, you're going to end this already?
Yep.
No.
I know.
And then he's like, I got a new one for you. Oh, yes, thank you. Like, this is great. So that was cool.
We wanted Roman to accept Sammy, but we didn't cheer Roman when he did accept Sammy because of what he put Sammy through before he accepted him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's
exactly.
Good.
I loved
like,
it. It was great.
Sammy's in the group. Roman accepted him, but we don't like Roman for it, even though Roman's really cool. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, Sean, and this has got to be it because I do have to run.
Yes. The last thing was in that Raquel Dakota stuff, which, again, if you're going to do distractions, just I'd almost rather do a no DQ than just a dumb roll-up. I don't like either one, but I'd rather have a no DQ just to have a bunch of fighting if you're going to do that. And then all of a sudden, what do you guys think about this random Shotzi babyface turn out of nowhere? Where did that come from? Shotzi, we don't even know who she is. All of a sudden, she's randomly coming out helping the babyfaces. Makes no sense. I don't like really Shotzi anyways, but all of a sudden, they're putting her up against Bayley as a babyface. What do you guys think about all that? I'll leave you there. Wade, yeah. Appreciate you, man, as always. You guys are the best. Alex, I appreciate you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Alex, yeah, what do you think?
The Shotzi thing,
Levesque,
like, sir, and also my assumption with the War Games announcement is I assume the men's match will be the Bloodline against somebody. We'll see where that goes. But the women's match is clearly going to be Damage Control plus whatever, probably against Rodriguez, Shotzi, and, you know, some version of Bianca, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So my point with Shotzi is that they needed somebody viable to put in a match like that that's not named Aaliyah, and Shotzi was their best option. Also, Levesque likes her. I really think it's that simple. I don't think that there's much more thought that was put into it than that.
And I'm giving some mulligans to Levesque early, you know, in his run. I mean, there's some things that were in motion that aren't going to be his thing, and, you know, allow him to correct course. I don't want him turning people and then turning them back, you know, a few handful of weeks later next year. You know, I mean, again, like once a year you can do that if you just think, oh, that's not working, or there's an injury, or I thought of something better. But, I mean, don't make a habit of it. But, I mean, you know, he's trying to get things aligned the way he wants them. And I don't think Shotzi, was, you know, he'll run is all that memorable. So
he's simply correcting course and positioning people where he wants them. It's the same thing with the Becky thing. It is what it is. Like, he's going to reposition people and bring people in, and then we'll know come WrestleMania. That's how I'm looking at it right now. It's coming out of WrestleMania. We'll see where everybody's at, and we'll go from there.
Yep. Hector from Chicago underlines a couple things we said. I'll just read it quickly. Could we see a story leading to Survivor Series with Brawling Brutes and Imperium having mutual respect built after all these battles that leads to a mix of them against the Bloodline at War Games? So he has added that. It's in all caps, Hector, so it's hard to read. I'm just calling you out. He also says, I feel Judgment Day versus Reign Company is more personal, but how do you leave the Bloodline out of War Games? And Sammy's face, when Roman told him to take the shirt off, perfect. Solo looks like a stud so far. Alex, any thoughts on that idea for War Games?
I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think the Brutes might be involved. I think it's very possible. If they do 5-on-5, it'll be the Bloodline with Sammy against the Brutes, Drew, and Kevin Owens would be my guess. If they do just a 4-on-4, then I would imagine the Bloodline minus Sammy or minus maybe Solo against the Brutes and Drew. That's possible. I would say those are the two guesses I have. But there's also an outside shot that it's the Bloodline against some random group like McIntyre, the Street Profits, Kevin Owens, and Ash. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's WWE, so it's possible they do something like that, too.
Yep. Alex, is there anything else from this show that you want to bring up, comment on?
No. We hit on pretty much everything. The only thing we didn't really comment on too much was people brought it up, but the Rodriguez and Damage Control thing.
Yeah.
I just wish they would have left that segment off the show if they were only going to give it a minute and not do anything. They would have been better served to just not do it at all, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Well, thanks, everybody, for calling and listening. It's like, Derek did not call in, which is good because I do got to roll here and get this off to the producer. Alex, thank you so much. I hope everybody searches PW Torch and subscribes and listens to the current show. And their shows are evergreen, so people can catch up on all of them. And it's even easier to do as a VIP member because you can subscribe to individual shows, individual VIP RSS feeds for each of the shows. So go VIP, everybody. Alex, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Wade.
You bet.